the other night, late at night, I was editing our top 10 highlights of the week across the state, and I'm deciding which one is going one and which one's going two and which one's going three, and we're kind of deciding the order here. And I call my roommate in. He was up late working in the room next to me, and I just said, "Hey, which one of these plays just wow gives you a wow factor?" I was deciding between Braden Smith's Russell Wilson-esque scramble, get out of trouble and heave way downfield for a touchdown, versus that Gabe Tahir play. And when he saw Gabe Tahir catch that ball low, keep his burst and center of gravity and escape, what looked like all 11 defenders from Chihuahua for a touchdown, the comment he made was, "I feel like that's the type of play that on NFL draft day you see ESPN or the NFL or whoever start to kind of replay and say, this is what this guy looked like in high school, and now he's here." So Kamiakan fans of the MCC, save that one, because, hey, you never know. This is the SB Live Washington podcast, your twice weekly look at high school sports across the Evergreen State and the people who play them. I'm Andy Bueller, reporter with SB Live. Today we're going to preview week three of the high school football season, give you some breakdowns on some of the top games across the state, as well as picks, predictions. We're going to go over some news at the statewide level, some news coming from the WIAA and the Department of Health that impact the way high school sports are going to be looking going forward, as well as state championship venues. And then we're going to be joined by two Richland High School standouts. We're going to talk to Elijah Rodriguez, defensive end running back, all MCC, as well as defensive back Deacon Boyce. They have been a huge part of Richland's resurgence here in the last year, from the spring into the fall. Both are seniors. Both were eighth graders during that last state championship run the Bombers made, and they're hoping to bring them back. I'm joined, as always, by SB Live senior reporter, your pal and mine. I think this week he is your pal and mine. Some weeks he's nobody's pal, but he's also the pride and the prodigal son of Tacoma, Todd Millis. Todd, how we doing? We're staring week three in the face.
Yeah, there's been some news from the WIA that you've covered this week, Andy, and let's have some fun on some picks, man. I'm looking forward to some really big games this week.
If you're just now joining us, if this is the first time you've listened to this podcast, we are reporters at Scorebook Live. You can find our work at scorebooklive.com/Washington, where we have statewide coverage of this high school football season, including weekly top 10 rankings, an all classification top 25. This podcast twice a week, as well as daily installments, getting to know some of the top players across the state, compelling storylines, and of course, player rankings as well. Todd, let's jump into it. We're going to do a quick news roundup to kick things off. As of Monday, a new mask mandate for outdoor events went into effect. That came from the Office of Governor Jay Inslee and the State Department of Health. Events with 500 or more people, spectators are going to have to wear masks. So masks are coming outdoors now, with hospitalizations across Washington State at what the State Hospitals Association told the Seattle Times is the worst it's been since the COVID-19 pandemic. The Delta variant is here in full swing, and we are certainly not out of this thing, which is why this mask mandate has come down the pike. If you are a spectator at an event, a football game with more than 500 people, that game will require masks. Players won't have to wear masks, coaches won't have to wear masks, but spectators in the stands will. How does this change things from a spectator standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, we're going back to the spring. And if you want to watch football, let's keep that mask mandate. Let's abide by it. The interesting next step, I think, Andy, is will football players and coaching staffs, will that be mandated for them as well? Now, I was at the Bothell Tahoma game last week, and a school district like North Shore School District is already requiring its four high schools to wear masks during games. So it's going to be interesting to see if other school districts continue follow what North Shore School District is already doing this fall. I think we're headed toward that here in the near future.
No question. We saw that last week, although, you know, I think that was those were district specific guidelines. I know there was a district too in the Tacoma area, right, that did the same thing. But on the other side of the coin, now that we have this mandate, there are, as you know, a lot of communities across this state that do not support masking of any kind, overwhelmingly. And, you know, part of the calculus here, when you look at this 500 number is, you know, you start to think, and I thought as soon as I saw this news, is like, I wonder if any school is going to say, we don't want to wear masks so badly that we're going to just cap our attendance at 500 so that spectators don't have to wear masks. That way we can control things and, you know, spectators won't get angry. At the same time, you obviously sacrifice the feeling of playing in a packed home football environment, which, you know, is what kind of this fall allowed Friday Night Lights to be, as opposed to what it looked like in the spring with small crowds. And there's one school that's actually doing that that I know of. There could be many more, but La Center High School, a 1A school in Southwest Washington, has elected to cap attendance at 500. That starts Friday. They host number one 2B team in the state, Kalama. They're going to host number two 1A team in the state, Eatonville, next week. You know, I exchanged emails with La Center Athletic Director Matt Cook, who gave a rationale for this and just said, hey, look, we're tired of being the mask police at our events. And so in order to follow the mandate the governor's laid out, we felt the best course of action was to cap everything at 500. And so La Center is going to use 250 tickets. It's going to go back to what it looked like in the spring, where each football player gets to give their tickets to five or so people, the seniors at least, and then freshmen and juniors get three. There's 60 for the student section, 40 for the band, and 150 for Kalama's team fans. But you know, this is something that you know, is, as you said, Todd, a step that we probably could have seen coming based on the COVID trends, but one that begs the question, is this where it stops? Or do numbers continue to progress in the wrong direction to where players are masking up and coaches are masking up as well? Because one stipulation to this is players and coaches still fall under the Department of Health's K-12 guidelines, which say that outdoor sports masks are not required but recommended. And so that's why that's not going to apply. Players aren't going to have to be throwing masks back on just yet. So that's news item number one. The second one looks forward to the Gridiron Classic in 2021. The state championship football event that put on by the WIA has not been held since 2019. The pandemic shut that down last year. And there was a big change in 2019, Todd, that we've talked about a ton. And the WIA moved away from holding those six state championship events in the Tacoma Dome and instead held them spread out across three district stadium high school sites in the greater Tacoma area. Now, this was a move that was dictated by rising rent costs in the Tacoma Dome, as well as a decline in ticketing and attendance from spectators. And there were also complaints about fan experience with the renovations inside the Tacoma Dome. But as we know now, as I reported earlier this week on the site, scorebooklive.com/Washington and the SB Live Sports app, that the WIA has secured two of those sites. Verbal agreements have been made for the state championship events to return to Mount Tahoma Stadium in Tacoma and Sparks Stadium in Puyallup. Now, it's working on Harry Lang Stadium in Lakewood, which hosted the 1A and the 2B state title games. But an agreement has not been made yet. They don't know what Harry Lang's availability is. And so worst case scenario, the WIA told me, is if they can't secure that third location, then the other two games will be dispersed across the other two stadiums. Todd, going forward, do you think this is a model that works? Because we know that one of the big complaints with the move away from the Tacoma Dome is, man, the kids looked forward to that special venue of stepping foot in the Tacoma Dome. obviously holding it in events that are that big, you bring the cost into question, and it can become too expensive for the state association. Is there a way to bridge that gap here, or is this event going to be at high school stadiums going forward?
I didn't mind it in 2019, Andy. I was pleasantly surprised with the atmosphere at Sparks Stadium for the 3A and the 2A state championships. Other states like Idaho, such as Idaho, do that. And with the pandemic hitting and the WIA kind of, you know, sort of being, you know, on its bicycle, so to speak, on with other issues related to the pandemic, it was pretty logical that it would come back to those three high school stadiums. Now, what I do like is that they continue to have dialogue with a, you know, one-stop shop facility or a venue, Husky Stadium. You know, it just, the bottom line is they're, you know, they're not in a position to pay an exorbitant amount to hold their state championships at a Tacoma Dome or at a University of Washington or at a Seahawks Stadium. So right now, this has to be the alternative. The one thing I'm interested to see moving forward is, you know, there was some talk that maybe they would look at a different county or a different set of really good facilities. I mean, it would have been fun to have, you know, these three championships go up to King County and be played in a Memorial Stadium. And, the stadium that Woodinville plays in, the one that we all like, the one in Bothell.
Pop Keeney Stadium. Yeah, Pop Keeney
Stadium, yes. Why would I forget that? It's one of the best venues in the state of Washington. So, I mean, it would be interesting to see if they could have grouped three stadiums like that in King County.
Not to mention a lot of people on the east side of the state that don't want to drive 5 hours or however long to get to a state championship event at another high school stadium. You know, the 1A's, the 1B's, and even the 2B's, there's a lot of those great teams every year that are east side dominant. So why not hold one of those small games or one of the smaller classification state championship games at a Cheney Stadium, at a, you know, a new Union Stadium in Spokane or something in the Tri-Cities or Yakima?
Or Southwest Washington. There are three really good football stadiums in your neck of the woods, Andy. So, and that option would be open for a small school state championship this year. If it's, you know, Royal and Connell, would they play in Moses Lake? Absolutely. The WIA has said in the past and states that it would continue to look at, you know, not making those two communities come all the way over to the west side, just because that's where the planned state championship game was. So, I mean, there's some wiggle room. There's some adjustment room there to hold a state championship game in Eastern Washington this year. If the finalists, and obviously the finalists would dictate that. So yeah, I mean, right now in terms of 2021 fall, the logical move was bringing it back, doing kind of a repeat of 2019. And then it'll be interesting to see what the WI does in terms of continuing to shop at a one-stop shop or looking at other stadiums in different counties around the state next year.
Yeah, the WI said this is written in pencil. Those two agreements with the two stadiums I mentioned at the top are both verbal agreements. There's nothing been signed, no lease agreements made official. But at the next executive board meeting, which is set for September 26th, that picture could be a little bit more clear. One thing I should mention that you can read in the story that I'll link in the show notes, and you can find it on the site as well, is that the WIA met with the University of Washington about the potential of bringing in the six-game event to Husky Stadium. The reason an agreement could not be reached was because of lack of available locker rooms for all six teams. I guess all 12 teams, I should say, and the steep rental costs. Everything under the stadium purview is controlled by the stadium. So when you rent a stadium, you also rent. You're also being, renting the security team. You're renting concessions. You're renting, everything the event needs to make happen. And those costs, from what I'm told, are substantially higher at a UW than even they are at maybe a Tacoma Dome or especially at these district sites. So stay tuned for that. Those are the two pressing news items of the week at the state level. For now, Todd, though, you want to move on to some picks? All right, we're going to go through some of the top games across the state. If you are a visual learner, you can head to the site right now. I'll link it in the show notes. Todd has already got out a primer of the week three football across this state. A really good breakdown, but we're going to give you some picks and a deeper look at some of the top games, starting with Sumner at Puyallup, Todd. This is a 4A, our first big 4A SPSL tilt of the season. Sumner and Puyallup, of course, are both top 10 programs. This is a league that we've talked about, since our preseason coverage started coming out about, is this the deepest league in the state, regardless of classification? Sumner and Puyallup see each other in week three. Who you got?
Well, just for the record, as collectively, SB Live did pick Puyallup to win 31-28. This game really intrigues me, and a lot of that has to do with the rapid improvement of Bo Carlson, the quarterback at Sumner, who did not play against Puyallup last year. He suffered a season-ending thumb injury in the practice leading up to that game, but showed that he his effectiveness as a runner at the quarterback position really improved his passing. He's gotten off to a fast start. So, I mean, that his presence alone, his improvement alone, has really given this Sumner offense a boost. Now, the question is, what Puyallup's been able to take advantage of the last four wins — they've won four in a row in this series — is they've hit on some big plays, and they've won the turnover battle. And, Micah Balzerini is in that mold. He can really push the football down the field. He has the Dwyer kid that it's a really good big play threat. So they have that capability in this game, Andy, to kind of model that blueprint. Something tells me that Sumner — this is a Sumner team with a lot of seniors that I think is going to go in and into Puyallup, and I think they're going to win the game. Personally, that's what I feel, even though the site says differently.
This next game, Todd, is one that I will be at down in Southwest Washington. We've got another game with heavy league title implications. That's going to be a theme here in these games of the week. Ridgefield goes and plays at Hawkinson. That game is going to be at District Stadium. Ridgefield's a team that's kind of been knocking on the door. Hawkinson's won seven consecutive league titles. They got at least they won their seventh last year in the spring. But Ridgefield tried everything it could to upend them last year in the spring in that shortened season. They could not get over the hump, though. That game was 14-7 Hawkinson in the spring. Ridgefield turned the ball over three or four times in the red zone, nearly on the goal line, knocking on the door to win that game. So plenty of opportunities for the Spudders. But this year, Ridgefield has started off, really, really strong with the 2-0 start, with wins, easy wins over Heritage and Castle Rock, setting up this week three tilt. We predicted at SB Live 28-24 Ridgefield Spudders. But you can't discount Hawkinson. Hawkinson went up and played a really good game against a solid Linden team, both of them starting up high in our top 10 preseason. Todd, when you look at Ridgefield and Hawkinson and kind of the implications in the 2A landscape here, what do you see?
I see a big opportunity, like you said. Ridgefield and the rest of that 2A GSHL have had their chances, had their shots at the defending champs, have not been able to get over the top. I think during this run, and I think we had it at Hawkinson's 26-game league winning streak, this might – and there's been a good Washougal team and another good Ridgefield team that's had some chances too, but this might be the best opportunity for a 2A GSHL team to go and end this winning streak and Hawkinson's reign atop the league. Listen, man, I we talk about this a lot with the Kinko and traditional teams and programs and what John Eagle has built at Camas. I personally would not pick against Hawkinson at home, the defending champs with all that pride and all that firepower. I know why you like Ridgefield, but I kind of like Hawkinson in this game, Andy, and to prevail and continue that streak.
Well, I like that. And, you know, Hawkinson has, you know, one of the two best athletes in the league and one of the best athletes in the region in Andre Northrup. So he's a guy who can do a little bit of everything. He's really hard to stop. Can quarterback Jared Oldham get him the ball and set him up? And can they kind of develop enough of a synergy offensively with their run game with Cody Wheeler to kind of keep Ridgefield's defense off balance a little bit? But Ridgefield has that same type of guy in Ty Snyder. He's had a tremendous start to the season on both sides of the ball. It should surprise nobody who has been paying attention to that team and that league. He's a transfer from Kingsway after Kingsway's program shuttered a little over a year ago. And, you know, this is a Ridgefield team that if you're looking at how quickly that community in Ridgefield is sprouting and growing, everybody's looking at that Ridgefield program going, this is a team that's not going to be in 2A for very many more reclassifications. You know, whether it's in the 2A GSHL this year, whether it's in the 3A GSHL a couple years from now, this Ridgefield team is going to be one to be reckoned with. So I see this being a great game. Hopefully the offenses prevail a little bit more than it did in the spring. Game number three, and this one ties in perfectly into our next segment, our interview. Kamiakin at Richland. Kamiakin is coming off of a momentous win against Chihuahua last Thursday in week two. Chihuahua, of course, had its own league win streak going back a few years, and Kamiakin had not been able to get over that hump, you know, in recent years. And the offense just, you know, was uncorked behind quarterback Henry Mercado. Finding his weapons, you know, Aiden Canada, Luis Salgado, Gabe Tahir, showing that Kamiakin has the offensive firepower to, you know, do some serious damage. And you know, oh, by the way, they've got, you know, a Penn State prospect on defense at corner, some really solid linemen, starting with Aaron Tano, and genuinely one of the best linebackers in the state in Luis Salgado. How does that match up against a Richland team that is also on an upswing? A team that we had in our preseason top 10, we have in our active top 10, and a team that, you know, feels like it wants to reassert itself atop this MCC.
I should just pick Kamiakin based off the Gabe Tahir highlight this week.
What did you think about that, seeing that highlight, that 42-yard?
That was pretty impressive. And I know you mentioned this, that he is reluctantly playing wide receiver. He is more of a cornerback. That's the position he'll likely play in college. But, you know, the way he squatted down to get that low pass and to get up and make a couple juke moves, break a couple tackles and go, that was pretty impressive. I should just pick Kamiakin off that. But here's the thing. And I think if people ask why we talk a lot about the MCC, this is a team that's crowned three different state champions over the last decade. Yeah. And two of them are playing this week. What I like about Richland is it hasn't been easy for them since they've won the state championship. They've had to deal with some team tragedy and a quarterback change last year unexpectedly. What I like about Cameron Kitchens, and he's now leading that offense at Richland, is he kind of did his own thing this summer. He went to the Manning Passing Academy competition. You know, it's easy for these for guys in the Northwest just to kind of do 7-on-7 stuff around here and go to camps and Northwest 9, which is obviously grown into the premier off-season event. But he decided to he wanted to make a break and go to the South and see different things and go against different quarterbacks around the country. I like that about Cameron Kitchens. And oh, by the way, you know, in his brief stint last spring, you know, he was pretty impressive. I know they didn't beat Chihuahua, but he still had a decent amount of passing yards, and he's kind of picked up where he's left off the first 2 weeks here. He's a really talented quarterback that Mike Needhold trusts. Again, does Richland have enough guys to match Kamiakin? And I don't know. I think this is going to be a barn burner. I know that we picked Kamiakin collectively. I personally kind of like Kamiakin a little bit as well. Personally, would not surprise me if the Bombers at home came away with the win behind Cameron Kitchens.
The onus here, Todd, is on Richland. It's can they do it at home? Does Richland have the firepower to match and usurp Kamiakin here? You know, and like you said, these are two state championship programs. These are two state championship coaches in Scott Biglin and Mike Niehold, who, shout out to Coach Niehold, just got his 100th win last week against Hanford. We're going to pick a couple more games before we jump to that interview, Todd. North Creek plays host to Idaho 5A State Power Coeur d'Alene. North Creek is a program that's on the upswing, and oh, hey, they're throwing the ball this year, too. Offense is showing a little bit more dynamism in that 4A Kinko. Who do you like in this game, North Creek, Coeur d'Alene?
Like the gradual progress that Torrey Myers has built with this program in a very competitive school district. Kennedy McGill, best dual threat quarterback that they've had during Myers' time there. But I'm not betting against Coeur d'Alene. They've been doing it for so long with Sean Amos. I know that they had a little bit of a barn burner against Sandpoint a couple weeks ago, did not play last week. They're traveling over to Pop Keeney and playing on a Saturday afternoon game. I've got Coeur d'Alene in a close one.
There's a Metro League doubleheader this weekend, too. Mount Baker plays Seattle Prep. That's a COVID reschedule game that comes together. Baker, boy, are they challenging themselves. The Mounties in 1A. Are making sure they line up some of the state's better programs here before they jump into league play. Coming off a game where they travel across the state and play Wenatchee, a 4A team. Ron Lepper and Mount Baker comes down and play Seattle Prep and Braden Smith. That game, as well as the late game, Lake Stevens making its debut against O'Day. Lake Stevens, of course, our number two team in 4A that has not played yet this season due to a COVID outbreak and a shutdown right before the season. Lake Stevens makes its debut against O'Day, which has rolled against two really good teams in the first 2 weeks. Who do you got? The early game and the late game.
Well, I mean, I talked to Tom Try. I don't think he's going to enjoy opening against this particular team with that kind of balance and that physicality. I like O'Day to continue its really good, dominant, recent dominant form. And, you know, Seattle Prep's already played a smaller school, a really good small school team, and Archbishop Murphy handled them a week ago. I like Davin Beeson. I think he's going to see Braden Smith a few times and get the best of him, but I would never bet against Braden Smith with the ball in his hands. We saw that in our highlight reel this week. We've seen it in person. I like Seattle Prep by a couple touchdowns at least.
You think Davin Beeson gets a pick off of Smith?
I'm going to say no.
We watched him because, you know, we watched him come through over the middle and have that pick six in that FSP error padded game in the spring. He's sure capable of it.
Yes, he's a really good linebacker. And I think he might get a sack. I think you're going to see him utilizing that, but I Seattle Prep just has, you know, they don't want to be too aggressive with Braden, because once Braden breaks containment, good night. And I think Braden's going to break off a couple long touchdown runs and make a couple more big plays with his arm too. So I like Seattle Prep in this game at Memorial.
Two more predictions here. Lincoln travels. Boy, the Abes are loading up their non-league schedule as well. They go up to play Bellevue, which is coming off of two just boa constrictor-esque, just dominant shows, opening with a blowout win, you know, 51-13 at Peninsula, and then week two shutting out Kentwood in a game where its offense sputtered. But hey, when you put up more than 30 points and shut the other team out, you know, that you can get by. Lincoln, Jabari Johnson coming off an amazing offensive performance, heads up to Bellevue. Who you got, Todd?
Encouraging to see what Jabari Johnson did with the total defense, 570 yards last week. Hope we see more of that. Discouraging is what the Abes are doing on defense. Not the opponent you want to see when you have a struggling defense. That wing T offense will put Lincoln in the grinder and win convincingly.
Squalicum Linden to round things out. Who you got?
I still think Linden's finding itself a little bit. I think the Squalicum team in that backfield, led by Ben Schemblocker, is fantastic. I really think this is a team in 2A that we've got to watch out for. You know, so I like the Storm, man. The Storm is coming.
We want to hear what you guys have to say as well. Head to scorebooklive.com/Washington. Seek those games out in the schedule and make pick'ems yourself. It's always fun to see which fan section is more energized on that Scorebook Live game picker ticker heading into each week. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm joined by Elijah Rodriguez and Deacon Boyce of the Richland Bombers. Before we get going, I want to take a moment to tell you about something really exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest high school sports news here in Washington and across the country. With the SB Live Sports app, it's now even easier to follow your favorite team and tailor your experience to your interests. With real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more, the app delivers on the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's the number one source for Washington high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Todd Millis, myself, Andy Bueller, as well as SB Live's preeminent basketball mind and recruiting expert Dan Dickow. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. Andy Bueller with Scorebook Live, right across the street from Fran Risch Stadium at Richland High School. I'm here with Elijah Rodriguez and Deacon Boyce, seniors and leaders on this Richland team. You guys, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
We're sitting here looking, and we can see the stadium. You guys practice here on the grass. You know, that won't change once the stadium goes down, but as of October, you guys are going to be getting a new stadium. It starts, the construction starts, and for a storied program as Richland is, that stadium carries a lot of history with it. What are your guys' earliest memories of that stadium, of Richland football, and what's it been like, you know, playing there with in a place with so much tradition?
Oh, it's definitely got to be like when you go when you're a young kid, you're playing on the other side, playing football under the bleachers, under the scoreboard and stuff. Then you get a little older and you're like, wow, I want to watch the game now. Then you get real into it, and then you're actually here and you're playing. It's your senior year.
Yeah, I think it's crazy. It's like you've always grown up watching the games out there, and then now all of a sudden you're the one playing and everybody's looking up to you.
A little bit of an up and down last couple years, and something you guys are hoping to right this year and feel like you have the personnel and the right people in place to be able to do that. Walk me through what it means to kind of have control over that as leaders at this point. You know, you guys just a couple years ago were in two straight state championships. You guys saw that as eighth graders. You know, now you're strapping on the pads yourself. How do you hope to leave your impression on this program?
Feels good. Like, you know, we're all out here. We've all wanted like a big goal from when we were little kids. We've all talked about it growing up, and like it's here now. Like, we got big footsteps to follow with the team who won state. So we're just trying to fill our spots.
Yeah, I agree. We've all definitely been working, and we all know that, but we're just coming for the top, and like he said, we're ready.
What makes this team special? What's unique about this team that people outside of the program might not know?
Oh, it's definitely like our culture. Like, you come to Richland, every one of us are close. Like, it's me, starting QB, Deacon, everyone out there, like, we're together all the time, and like, we're all like, we're family.
Yeah, to add on to that, it's not just like we're brothers. We're all one. We're family. We're united.
Yeah, I was at Kennewick yesterday and I sat down with Miles Mayofsky, and he was just saying how, you know, you might line up against you guys and against the Kamaik and Tamfords, you know, Chihuahuas, but like a lot of you guys played like grid kids together and know each other off the field. Just looking around the MCC and some of the great talent that's in this league. What's it like? Just what kind of bond do you have with some of those other guys across the league? And what is the pride like of this league? Just when you kind of take a step back.
Obviously we're all like, some of us are good friends like outside of football and stuff. But like when the game starts, I guess like that's, it's different. Like, they're on the other team, we're on our team, and like we're going to win. Like, just we may be friends outside, but like we're here for one goal.
Yeah, we're here for one goal, and yeah, outside of football, we're all friends, but strap on the pads, it's go time.
What's your guys' favorite memory in a Richland uniform?
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot of good memories. I don't know. It was probably my first varsity game, like under the lights, all the people there cheering. Like you can't forget it.
Okay, so Elijah, it's his first varsity game. Deacon,
mine definitely gonna be in one of our games. Cameron Kitchens, our quarterback, was running the ball, fumbles, then ended up kicking it, and I scored on like a 50-yard touchdown and just random luck. And
it's just like you guys drew it up, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there you go.
Right now, you're preparing for Hanford in week two, but what are the goals of this team this season? You know, obviously the expectations are high, but what do you guys hope to accomplish?
We obviously, like, we're taught it's one game at a time. Doesn't matter who we play next. We focus on the game at hand, and we keep practicing the same. Like, we practice as hard as we can all week, and it doesn't matter who we're playing.
Yeah, we're every single game, we're always looking to play at our level, not the other teams, and we're really looking for big plays and big dubs.
What's the most signature win you guys have experienced in your time here?
Had to have been, like, I would say, like, last year's wins, because we came off of a pretty bad season before that, and that was like the year I think we bounced back, and then we knew, like all of us who were younger, weren't seniors, we knew like this next year is going to be really good, and like we're out here playing for each other.
Yeah, I agree. It was last year too, and all the wins from last year, and it really just showed us what we're coming into for this year and what we need to do to be the best.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been, in recent years, you know, Chiawana Kamayakin's been battling at the top of this league in Kennewick 3A as well. I mean, making a state semifinal run 2 years ago. To be really genuinely in all three of those games last year, did that kind of show you guys something and what you guys saw you were able to do? You know, I know you took losses to all three of those teams, but were you guys encouraged by what you saw, knowing what you brought back?
100%. Like, we saw what we did 1 year and we weren't as confident, and like now we know what work we had to do, what work we have to put in. All of it now is just putting it together and going out there on Friday night.
Yeah, I agree. We've definitely been working for it. After playing those three games, although they were losses, we all knew that it was kind of a confidence booster, and we're out for blood this year.
Okay, last two questions, but it's kind of part one and part two. I asked Miles this yesterday, but let's start with you, Elijah. Do you have a pregame routine?
Yeah, I do. I always go to Cameron's house, our QB's house, before the game. I eat carne asada.
Cameron Kitchens.
Yeah, Cameron Kitchens. I go over there. I eat carne asada. I drive to the gas station. I get a Monster Energy drink. I drink that before I walk in. Tape my wrist and then pretty much do my thing. They're on
Monster Energy. That's the fuel you need.
Oh yeah, Mango Loco for sure.
Deacon, what about you?
Friday after school at 2:30 or at 1:30, go home, take a nap till about 3:45, get ready, grab a Reese's, head on out to the game, tape both wrists, and we're out and throwing. We're ready.
You got your naps down, man. That's like Tom Brady level.
Yeah, I have to get a little bit of sleep before.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, post-game routines. Say it's after a big win. Is there anything you do individually or you guys do as a team? Any traditions?
We all kind of go off and do our own thing. Some of us meet up for a little bit, might go get food, but most of us, I just go home and I watch the game again on my phone on Huddle.
Same night?
Yeah, same night. I wait up till midnight when they drops, and then I watch the whole game again and then wake up for film the next morning.
Yeah, same here. Personally, I go to Denny's after every single game, home or away. We go to Denny's, a couple of us, eat some food, grub real quick, and then go home, watch some film, and then wake up 7 a.m. for some early morning workout and film.
The go-to Grand Slam?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah?
It's so good.
Right on. Well, Elijah Rodriguez, Deacon Boyce, thank you both for being here. I wish you guys the best this season.
Yes, thanks again for having us.
Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. If you do it on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and a review to help us best serve you, the listener. You can find our website at scorebooklive.com/Washington. There you'll see news, features, highlights, podcasts, and everything in the world of high school sports across this state. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Washington Federal. And thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. This song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away. It's written by James Schroeder, Carl Johnson, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. We'll be back next week.